Hello and welcome to Simply Safe Podcast, Money Control's very own personal finance podcast. I'm Kaizal Adajania, and this is our first podcast for the year 2021. And the beginning of the year is always the best time to set the rules of how we should manage our money in this year ahead. And we're coming off a very difficult year indeed. Ever since COVID-19 pandemic was declared last year, lots of jobs were lost and incomes of many people fell, either because they got salary cuts or their businesses shut down or had to be scaled down. Among many other things, the year 2020 also taught us the importance of having an emergency corpus and a health insurance. But our investments too went through its ups and downs, didn't they? And how should we prepare our money box in 2021? Yes, we know that vaccines are on their way, but how long will it take for the entire nation to get vaccinated is yet unknown. In the meantime, economy is expected to struggle and markets too are expected to be volatile, especially since they have touched their recent highs. I have with me today Surya Bhatia. He is a New Delhi-based financial planner to tell us how to cut through this clutter and be better prepared money-wise in this year of 2021. Hi Surya, how are you doing? Welcome to our podcast.
Hi, good.
So Surya, let's start with the markets because that's what our readers want to hear upfront. We'll talk about various aspects of Moneybox as we go along, but let's just start off with equity markets. I mean, you know, Sensex has returned about 84% since its March 2020 lows. Many people are wondering, there are fence sitters who have been invested, who haven't yet invested in equity funds. And there are many people who have invested in equity funds and they are wondering whether this is a good time to withdraw the money. So what's your advice, Surya, for people who have already, who are already invested in equity markets? And those who haven't yet invested in equity markets, I mean, is this a good time to even think about equities?
See, there's nothing right and wrong about the equity markets. And to be honest, guys, they were never were. It's about all your individual perception. I think what we firmly believe, and I think the belief gets stronger day by day, is that you need to make sure that your asset allocation is in order. And I think that's the one of the few mantras you need to follow to ensure that you don't get swayed by good times or even by bad times. So, for example, let's go back, let's say 10 months in the February, March of the last year, which doesn't look actually very far behind us. Markets tanked aggressively. February and March were really bad months. But anyone who was overweight on equity beyond his or her logical risk appetite and went ahead overboard on the risk capacity also for that matter, actually took a beating and who did not have that capacity to hold on, panicked. And what happened? I think everyone knows this. You lost the money. So same thing over here. Those guys who want to come back now want to come back with a bang because they don't want to miss the rally, which they have already missed to a large extent.
Fear of missing out.
Yeah, the fear of missing out. So that's the advice being, the same advice holds true even now, actually. That don't enter with the assumption that market is going to give you a 15, 20, 30% return on an absolute basis from here. Just keep it simple and basic. It's not about making money for the next 6 months and then what happens? Huh? Even if you do that, lose 6 months return, it's not going to change a life for you. It's a mindset. It's a psychological affair. Please enter slowly, steadily and stick to your basics. I think you do the basics right. I don't think you can go wrong actually.
So when you say asset allocation, Surya, how much you need to have in equities, how much you need to have in debt, that percentage should be your guiding light, right? I mean, if you are supposed to be investing 60% in equities, and if you've, let's say, if you've gone 70% by now, because the markets have gone up. So that's your cue to correct, but you should correct in a way that it comes back to 60, right? You should not just take all the money out of the equity markets.
Absolutely. So that's also called in our language as portfolio rebalancing.
So
make sure you do a rebalance to your portfolio. And if a 50 has become 60 or 50 has become 70, bring it down to 50. We are actually going a step ahead and recommending investors, while you do bring it down to 50, if you think you need any cash flows over the next few years, please look at that also. And there is no harm, even if you reduce your equity from the desired 50 to even a 40, as an example, it could be 45, it could be 35. So look at your cash flows for the next few years and determine what you really want. And make sure those 3 years or 2 years of the years coming forward, the cash is with you And that is not in the equity basket.
In short, it's not just the Sensex level. It's not the absolute Sensex level that should be guiding you. It's a whole other mix of parameters, like how much cash you need in future. What is your desired equity allocation? What is your money requirement?
Absolutely. Because Kaza, I will tell you over here, the good part in today's market is giving you a lot of breathing space.
Okay.
Because they don't give you very often. Huh?
Okay.
They are at the all-time high and are remaining so for such a long period of time that you can take your time, just go a step back, evaluate what your needs are, what your cash flows are, and then plan. And even if you get out higher than what you should, and tomorrow the markets reacts the other way down, which means it goes further up, there is no harm in it.
Okay.
You will never have a regret because you actually moved out at an all-time high of today's level. Now, this all-time high can always be breached. The answer is yes. You don't know what the peak is, but you don't want to fall off the cliff.
Okay. And what about people who want to invest in equity markets now? So they're saying that, you know, there's a fear that don't let the markets correct. Everybody's saying correction might happen. So should we wait for a correction to happen and then enter, or should we enter at these levels? What if we enter today and then tomorrow there is a correction? So, you know, these are things that are out of our hands, but the questions are anyways there.
Absolutely. So here, I think the very simple approach you need to follow as an investor is to do a staggered transfers to equity.
Okay. Okay.
You can't time the market. It's about the time you spend in the market, which is critical. So I think the best way is to do a staggered transfer. Generally, we say 6 months to do a staggered transfer. But in the current time, we are saying, look at 12-month picture. Do a 12-month cycle to do a staggered transfer. Hmm. And because you'll be doing a staggered transfer through a liquid or an ultra short, or even a short term for that matter, which does not carry any exit load, you always have an option to enter lump sums or bigger chunks of money in case the market corrects.
Okay.
So you have the flexibility at your end, but don't deep dive right now because we don't know how much storm is brewing under the table.
Okay.
So wait for that. And you never know, in case market tanks from here, it's anyone's guess. Do a staggered transfer. What will be the worst case scenario? I think you may miss out at 5, 10, 15% upside from here, but then it could be a protection of your 15, 20% of downside, which could be around the corner, which no one knows.
Okay.
So therefore it's better to do a staggered transfer. It's more prudent in the current context.
Okay. Surya, do you also get a lot of inquiries on crypto? I mean, you know, that's the buzzword. Everybody is saying crypto.
It's the new buzzword right now.
It's the new buzzword right now. Correct. I mean, there's so much of interest in crypto without people actually even understanding what is crypto, how do prices go up, what will determine its prices to move this way or that way. How do you, if it, you know, should crypto be a part of our portfolios at all, or you would say just be away as far as possible? Where do you stand in this debate?
See, I will not typically comment as a yes and no on this line. Now, it is not that I don't want to do that, but there are no easy answers on this. See, the cryptocurrency, first of all, are not regulated enough, even if they are regulated in the first place, to really give me an assurance that they will not vanish tomorrow from the system. Second, even they're not even volatile. They're extremely volatile. If you look at the year 2018, just giving you a few examples to just kind of have a relation to it. 2018, had I invested from a calendar year, I think I would have lost 70-75%. Come to 2020, I would have made 3x. Go back a couple of days. One intraday, crypto lost 17%. So that defines the nature of that asset class. It's actually a beast which you cannot tame, and something which you don't know how to take.
Exactly. So you don't even know what's going to happen, what drives the prices
up. There are so many variables.
So many variables.
There's so many variables that you can't even, the problem is in an equity rationale, you can still define some variables, not 100%, but 80-90% variables you can still define. There are systematic risks, there are unsystematic risks you can define. But in a crypto, I don't see a systematic, it's all unsystematic for me. I really don't know where it's headed for from here. So can I give a sane advice to you, or can you give me a sane advice? Shall I buy today? These are good levels. These are sane levels. I actually don't have an answer. From a 20,000, it's 34,000, went down 31,500. It was more of a curiosity why I was tracking this. But did it give me a sense of security? The answer is no. Did it give me a sense of comfort? The answer is no. I should put my money in? It's anyone's guess. If someone wants to really put in, I'm not saying not say yes or don't say no. I'm saying if you allocate, it's a punting allocation for me. So when you do a punting allocation, How much you allocate? 2%, 3%, 4%, at best 5%, but the buck stops there. So you have to define your node risk parameters. You have to define where the buck stops and then actually stop.
But actually, even 2, 3, 4, 5% allocation also, you're saying for the highly risky guy who's...
For the highly risk taker investor over here.
Yes.
That's the unsaid rule. Absolutely. Only. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a punting game.
The other Surya concern is about, you know, when interest rates have gone down so much, you know, we've been seeing how fixed deposit rates have gone down, bank saving rates have gone down to abysmal levels, small saving rates have also gone down. So, you know, a lot of senior citizens are worried that, you know, their regular income has also gone down. So where do you see interest rates going this year? I mean, do you see FD rates going down even more, small saving rates going down even more in 2020? What is the strategy that you have for those who want some kind of a regular income, especially in the senior citizens tax bracket?
See, the good part from here onwards for the retail investor and especially senior citizens who are actually dependent on the interest rate income coming to them is that we don't see the interest rates further coming down from here.
Okay.
Fingers crossed. Primary reason is actually that the inflation has been quite high for the last few months. Mm. So RBI is using other tools to tackle the interest rates, but not letting it go down from here. So till the time the inflation is high, we're not seeing the coming of interest rates down from where it stands today. So that's a little bit of, I think, saving grace where we stand today.
Okay.
But by saying that, it doesn't kind of take me from the fact that interest is already very, very low. And FD for a senior citizen doesn't give you more than 5.5% as we speak. So that's not high. And when my inflation is actually touching 7%. So in a way, I'm losing money and I'm not even counting taxation over here. So what do you do? So the answers are not easy from here. I think you have to live with this for some time. Only the investors who can have a little bit of equity as an exposure, even at these levels. And when I say equity, I mean only 5-10%, just to generate that bit of an alpha, which could be able to meet my return equal to inflation, if not beat inflation. So target a return which is inflation adjusted, if maybe not adjusted, but at least inflation is equal to your return, I think, and just sit tight on that for some time. Till the reverse cycle on the interest happens, which could be maybe a quarter or two quarter or three quarter away from here. A lot of things will also depend on the global markets. I think as we speak, Senate elections are happening in US. I think we've got a cue whether the interest rates are going to move up and down, depending on who really wins, whether Democrats or Republicans come into play. But that's a little long thought. I think currently just maintain an allocation of 5-10% to equity just to pay down the your return is currently lower than your inflation, but then don't go overboard considering that equity can generate me very high returns. It's only there to match your return equal to inflation. Until that time, I think you don't have much of an option. Look at more strategies if you can. FDs are surely one. Look at debt strategies on the mutual fund space. And I think there going forward, a dynamic strategy can play a better role, which has high quality portfolio from a credit side and can play duration. But they're also more volatile.
Yes, true.
Very simple maths over here is that one concept, which everyone knows, is a risk-free return, which could be, let's say, equal to my bank FD. Let's say 5.5% today. Anything which I try to aim higher will carry an element of risk. The element may be very small, but we'll have that element of risk. Could be that because of the 10% equity or because of within the dynamic strategy of the debt, which I take, carry that volatility because of duration strategy. There is no credit risk, but there is a mark to market I carry. So I have to marry the little bit of risk and I need to understand that better. If I do that, I think this shall also pass.
Okay, cool. Surya, one other lesson that, you know, many of us learned in 2020 was the need to have health insurance. Okay, we know how COVID pandemic ravaged many financial lives, hospitalization costs, and, you know, people who didn't have insurance policies had to pay out of huge out-of-pocket expenses in very unexpected, you know. So, you know, obviously the need to, we need to have health insurance. The question is how much? And should we buy an individual policy or should we buy a floater policy?
See, very honestly, now you get answers on this, but when you really go through this, there is no rational of how much. If you have a need of health insurance in your family, whatever you have appears to be less. And if you don't have it, you think, why did I buy that insurance? The way I like to put this across is that it's a necessary evil to have. And you don't want to use this. You want this money to go down the drain because you don't want to use this claim.
Correct.
At the same time, you need to protect yourself and your family by ensuring that you are adequately covered, yourself, your family, your children, your parents, and whatever your family may be. Now, how much cover? I think it also depends on the kind of insurance policy you take. So first, let's talk about having a, whether you need to have an individual health insurance policy or you want to have a family, a floater policy. I think when you have a small nuclear family, let's say there's a couple, or there's a couple with young kids, then I think family floater makes more sense.
Okay.
Because the young children age doesn't matter beyond a point. It's a couple who are really covered, but they are also adequately covered because the kids are also covered. The premium is also not high because the couple is reasonably the same age. Now the next in line could be add your parents to this. That's the way the game changes now. There the risk also is high because of the age parents come with. So therefore, in those cases, and especially the ones which are, let's say, have a health issue, then we make sure that recommend also that please go for an individual cover for your parents.
Okay.
Because in case they end up claiming part of the family floater, if you have, then the other family members are actually left vulnerable. They're not having anything to get covered for. So therefore, parents should have a separate health insurance cover, while a nuclear family could actually look at having a family floater. You can now even have options. We can actually go for a combination of the two together, where a simple one plan can actually give you a individual cover as well as a family floater. That's also an option you can consider. But that will depend on your family size.
Okay.
If your family is big, extended family is there, they can actually go for this combo products available. But definitely, individual health covers are more expensive vis-a-vis a family health cover for obvious reasons. So you have to actually see a balancing act of the two, but don't only go by the premiums you pay.
Sure.
Please make sure your cover is adequate. Your covers are reasonable enough to cover you. And also your lifestyle also matters in this.
Okay.
Therefore, I think considering everything, you should decide whether I need to opt for an individual or a floater or a combination of the two together. And basis that you should decide how much cover I should go for.
And but minimal, I mean, I hear you when you say that, you know, there are a lot of variables to decide how much cover you actually need based on whether you are just a married couple or a couple with kids or you have senior citizens also in the pot. But a basic sum assured of 10 lakh, you know, if you are a couple at the very least, is that advisable? A basic of 10 lakh rupees or even 10 lakh rupees in today's time is very less.
I agree with you, but that also will depend, Gazat, on what is the age of the insured. If the couple, let's say, is 30, 35 years old, then having a even a 5 lakh or a 10 lakh cover should suffice. Because of a no claim, your sum assured also goes up.
Sum assured also goes up. Yes, okay? It goes up.
So over a 5-year period, it could be 100%, let's say, 20% come every year, 10% comes every year. So 5-7 years, your 5 lakh could become 10 lakhs or a 10 could become 15 or 20, whatever the case may be. But if you're a little older, let's say you're 40, then I think 10, 15 lakhs also is adequate cover for you at that age. And mind you, the younger you are, the probability of you continuing for long is also high. So therefore, start with reasonable number. Don't go overboard because what we see is, and that's the problem actually, either you are underinsured or you are overinsured.
Okay.
So someone will go and take a 1 crore of insurance. I'm saying you don't need that. What is the point of wasting money? Someone will take a 2 lakh. I'm saying that's nothing. So just marry the two together and see a balancing act of the two and take a reasonable cover. It could be 15 lakhs, could be 25 lakhs, depending on the size of family. But yes, as you rightly said, to start with a 10 lakh is a good cover to have. And it's a reasonable number. And mind you, the inflation in India, the health inflation is quite steep.
Okay.
You have a 15%, 20% health inflation coming to India for the last few years. And that's not less. It's huge. Yeah. So you have to counter that.
And many people and think that inflation is like 5-6%, but medical inflation, as you rightly pointed out, actually is far higher.
It's 15%, thereabouts. Yeah. So you have to counter that also. And no one is going to get younger from here. Huh?
Correct.
You will only get older. So therefore, you have to factor the future also and then take it. Because God forbid, in case something happens to you, an insurance company will not cover you because you don't make any business sense. That's very rude of me, but that's the hard fact.
Yeah.
So you need to make sure that you are covering yourself for the future also to a certain extent.
Okay.
So a combination of these put together, I think 10, 15 lakhs for a 35-year-old couple should be a good number to look at.
Okay. So, Surya, so far we've covered investments, we've covered insurance. Let's move on to the last segment of our podcast on something about spending, how we spend our money. Now, that obviously is also an important part of our money box, because if we spend too much, then our investment rate or our savings rate actually go down. But we need to spend, obviously, because expenses are obviously there, and especially if you're living in big cities. So, one thing that we noticed in 2020 is that a lot of us moved towards shopping online because of the lockdowns and all that. And, it's so convenient to sort of swipe your credit card online, because you're there in front of your computer. You can just click, 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 and keep buying whatever you want to buy. How to control your spends? I mean, what do you advise people who, use a lot of credit cards, who do a lot of online shopping? You can't get out of online shopping now, right? I mean, till we all get vaccinated adequately and are free to then get out of the house, till that time, we'll have to make do with online shopping. Any precautions you advise for our listeners?
I think you have to be disciplined enough, whether you grew up online shopping or a physical shopping, because at the end of the day, if you end up swiping your card, it doesn't make a difference. Yes, online adds an edge to overspending. So the discipline needs to kick in, and which is very important. As we always say, you need to decide that how much your savings are before you decide what your expenses are. It's easier said than done. But target not to kind of have more than 30% of your income as spendings. Now, it's not easier vis-a-vis actually implementing the same, but at least try doing it. And for a lower income bracket, this will be very difficult to kind of incorporate. So it could be there's no thumb rule behind this, but at least ensure that you are able to save some money from your income, because that's for your rainy day. And especially in today's time, when jobs are on the brink, on the cliff, you can just lose a job tomorrow. So therefore, just be careful about before you spend the money. Have a little bit in your nest egg, save some money. You should have the next 6-8 months of your cash flows. And once you have that ready, then only go and look at shopping beyond what your needs are. See, your needs and wants are two different aspects. Okay. Needs you can't control, wants you can. So at least the wants part, you should make sure you are spending only once your war chest for the next 1 year is ready for you. After also taking into fact your kids' education, your other expenses. I'm not trying to sound boring over here, because everyone wants to spend money. But see, it's your money. You have to spend it. You spend it today. You spend it 5 years down the line. But when you spend and where you spend defines how good you are as a saver and investor.
To summarize what you said, just, if you have those two rules in mind, which you just said about having an emergency corpus, about your 1 year sustenance, that should be in place. And try not to spend more than 30% of your income. I mean, at least if you have these two principles in mind, then, you can spend nearly as much as you are allowed to, or your income allows you to beyond these 2 months. At least you are safe. You've covered your ground. You have made provisions for yourself. Then it's easier for you to think about spending, right?
Yeah, very right. But we also add one more thing over there. And especially for those investors or spenders who are actually spendthrift, saying that if you are spending on a want and you want, before you click the button, just wait for a day. Do the click tomorrow.
Okay.
Just sleep over that for that night. And if you still think you want to do the click, go ahead.
Okay. That's a very good suggestion.
Trying to control the impulse. So just wait for a day. And then you see whether you really want it or can you live without it. Okay. If you think no, then go ahead. It's all yours.
Okay. What about loans? How much should you borrow if you want to borrow? Is there anything called as the good loan, necessary loan, bad loan? Or all loans are to be avoided? Where do you stand on that?
See, I don't mind having the definition of good loans being categorized as loans where you can get some tax break, the rates are low. So housing loan comes into play. You get a tax break. You can also kind of leverage yourself well, because the houses are not cheap. So you can leverage yourself well and take that loan, gives you a tax advantage. You can repay that. It brings you in discipline also, which you could not have done in normal course. So housing loans are not a bad option. I think I will categorize them as good loans, provided it's for your first house. It's not for an investment. Then it actually comes into a different category altogether. But if it's a good loan, your first house, I think you can go ahead for the same. But in current times, what I just said at the start of the discussion on this was that you have to manage your cash flows well. Huh? I'm coming back to the same topic now.
Yeah.
in this context, which is that if you have a housing loan running, you have an equity basket, you have gone overboard, bring it 60% down to 40%, 50%, use that 10% to repay the debt off. Bring it in more controllable numbers, reduce your EMI. So what happens by this? You brought it 60% to 40%, you paid the debt off, let's say the housing loan off. Now your EMIs have come down. Use that EMI to start the SIPs back into equity.
Okay.
So in a way, you reduce your equity allocation, but again, pumping in money in equity over a staggered manner over the next few years.
Okay.
But then what you have bought by doing this, less risk to your portfolio, and more importantly, peace of mind.
Correct. You don't have the sword hanging over your head.
I don't have that huge debt on my head.
Yeah.
There is no sword hanging on my head beyond a point. So bring it down to that controlled numbers and then start afresh. That's what I said. These markets have given you an opportunity to reassess yourself and see where do we stand. And they don't give you this kind of opportunity many a times. Huh? It's
okay.
Far and few.
Okay.
So use this to your advantage.
Okay. Thank you so much, Surya.
We will say. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Surya, for your valuable guidance. Had a great time talking to you. We've covered issues on investments. We've covered issues on insurance. How much cover should you have? And last but not least, how much money you should spend. And,
yeah.
The fact that, we are living in times where, the markets have been going up consistently since March 2020. So why not use this opportunity to sort of pay off your loans, also rebalance your portfolios and bring some peace of mind. And these are some of the, rightly said, these are some of the smart money moves that we hope our listeners adapt in their portfolios for the year of 2021. So thanks a lot, Surya, and wish you a very happy new year.
Thank you. Same to you and all the best to all the investors who are listening this.
Thank you, dear listeners. And we wish you all a happy new year. Keep listening to Simply Save. And from next week onwards, we'll be starting our pre-budget conversations. So do tune in. For more news, views and updates, log on to www.moneycontrol.com. Thanks for listening.